Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
This time on Gamers Week Podcast. I guess the first Final Fantasy movie, the animated movie that came out in the early 2000s, I don't remember the name of it. Do you guys remember? It was like, had nothing to do with Final Fantasy whatsoever, almost.
I think it was just called Final Fantasy.
Okay. No, I think I know what you're talking about. Final Fantasy. What was it called? Spirits Within. Spirits Within.
Okay. She got it before the buzzer.
Out of curiosity, how do you spell out Final Fantasy?
That's the noise my brain makes when the wheel is spinning. You just need to give it some time.
Right. It was that moment of like when it came out of your mouth and you're like, oh, did I just say that?
No, it's far better when you're with like a company that wouldn't appreciate it. Like, for example, my family.
Indeed.
And somebody says something and it's so bad. And I'm just over there by myself, just like.
My wife's parents do that all the time. They used to have this thing where, my mother-in-law had the sign that says, backdoor friends are best.
Oh, no.
And every time I would go in, I would just laugh and chuckle and everything. And Sarah would just shoot me this look like, don't say it. Don't say it. Or we'd go over to dinner and her mom was just like, okay, we're going to have a tossed salad. And I was like, do you need any help tossing the salad? She's like, no, it's fine.
What does backdoor friends even mean, if not?
People who come to your back door.
Rather than your front
actual
door.
Yeah. The door in your house and not your front door, I guess. I don't know. Maybe a surprise friend, but wouldn't that go hand in hand?
It could. Hopefully it's not a complete surprise.
Right. It's like that Kramer kind of friend that just busts in your back door, yeah, without any warning, right? So like, hey, how's it going? Just, oh, they're there, right?
And giddy up.
Yeah, sometimes it just makes you kind of cringe, you know, as soon as they come in your back door.
That's so cringe.
But then like, as soon as it's, you know, as soon as they're in there, it's not as bad.
You get a little used to it.
Yeah, you kind of accept things how they are.
Right? The shock wears off, yeah.
Right. And I mean, typically, they're not there for long. Right.
Well,
is that how a lot of people in prison feel? Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. And that's right, we're just going right into it.
It's like backdoor friends.
This is episode 107, and today is Wednesday, January 24th, 2024. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I will be your host this evening. But I am not alone, as you can hear from the chuckle from the peanut gallery. My two gracious co-hosts are so afraid that collectively, all three of us probably ruined about 2.5 pairs of underwear on our stream Monday night. You hear them, you know them, you love them. You have Writer's View, a.k.a. Blue Williams, and Ryan Payne, a.k.a. Retro Game Brews. How are you guys this evening?
Joke's on you. I wasn't wearing any underwear.
So you ruined a pair of sweatpants? Or just a chair?
Mine needed burning anyway, so we were it was good. Yeah.
It's like the ones that had just like one too many holes, and you're like, you know what, buddy, it's time to take you out to pasture.
A few holes, a few streaks, whatever.
Skid marks.
Skid marks. So let's jump into our reviews, reactions, and requests.
That was a hell of a segue. Man, we're in full form tonight. Jesus.
Yeah. I'm loving it. At Love Retro BTW says, anything digital we buy, we don't really own. We just have the right to use it, sadly. But when the apocalypse comes, at least I can use a generator to hook up my NES.
And I got to say, if the apocalypse comes and you're playing NES on a generator, life's got to be good, right?
Absolutely.
I would think when the raiding parties come for you, they might just get distracted and play NES instead and you could escape.
Or you could do like the whole like Lucas in the wizard thing. Like you challenge them, be like, I use a power glove. It's so bad. Like as soon as they walk in, be like, hey, don't take my stuff. I'll challenge you. You could take it all. I'll just let you. If you can beat me in Dr. Mario, and then boom, saved.
And then you become supreme ruler of the wasteland because you're the only one that can play Dr. Mario pretty well.
I like it.
I like that. Yeah.
That is the Mad Max we didn't get, but we deserve.
At a Gamer Looks at 40 says, if I'm only buying a license to use the product so long as it's available in the store, then I shouldn't be asked to pay $70.
Mm-hmm. Making some really valid points right there.
And at BenMagnet27 says, that Gaming History 101 segment gave me flashbacks. I remember when the news broke about the GTA Hot Coffee mod, and my dad was this close to tossing our PS2 copy of the game. Thankfully, we told him it was the PC port that had the mod, and we couldn't do squat on the PS2. Quick thinking, Ben.
All right, saving grace. And now, it's time for the Must Be Out Your Goddamn Mind. Gamers Week is the greatest podcast to ever live. They're better than Cassius Clay. They're better than Sugar Ray. They're better than who's that new boy, Mike Tyson, look like a bulldog. They're better than him, too. They whip Mike Tyson's ass. They whip all their asses. What about Joe Rogan? There you go. There you go. Every time I start talking about podcasts, incel got to pull out Joe Rogan out of their ass. That's day one. Joe Rogan. Let me tell you something. Once and for all, Joe Rogan is crazy, but compared to Gamers Week, Joe Rogan ain't shit. He beat Gamers Week in downloads. That's right. He did whip Gamers Week's ass. Donnie G was 75 years old when they fought. What? I don't know how old he was, but he got his ass whooped. Gamers Week had to come out of retirement to fight Joe Rogan. The man was 76 years old. Donnie G lied about his age. He lied about his age all the time. One time, Frank Sinatra came in here and he sat in this chair. And I said, Frank, you hang out with Gamers Week. Just between me and you, how old is Donnie G? You know what Frank told me? He said, hey, Donnie G is 137 years old. 137 years old.
Oh, man, you haven't met no Frank Sinatra.
You know what, sweets? I met the real Donnie G once.
You lying. You never met the real Donnie G.
Yeah, I'm at the real Donnie G in 2023 in Portland, Oregon. I was walking down the street, minding my own business, just walking down, feeling good. I walk around the corner, a man walk up, hit me in the chest, right? I fall to the ground, right? And I look up and it's the real Donnie G, and I said, Donnie G! And he says, oops, sorry, I thought you were somebody else.
Man, you lying. You never met the real Donnie G.
Knocked the wind out of me. Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
No, he did not. Would you three shut up? I should change the name of the podcast from Gamers Week to The Three Putzes. But hey, I got a joke for you. Man goes on to Gamers Week's Instagram, sits down, he's looking at the reels. He says to Gamers Week, hey Gamers Week, come look at your poll. Gamers Week says, is there something wrong with the poll? He says, look at your poll. Gamers Week says, there's something wrong with the poll. Did we forget an option? He says, will you look at your poll? What's wrong with the poll? Is it not relevant? Will you look at the poll? All right, I'll look at the poll. Where's the link?
Aha.
Aha. Aha. What do you know from funny?
You bastards. Very well done, Ryan.
Yeah, very nice.
Is that Donnie G? Like, oops, I'm sorry. I thought you were somebody else.
One of my favorite like tirades in that entire movie is that section right there. I love it. So good.
Man, you ain't never met no Dr. Martin Luther King. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. You. Who next?
See that? I couldn't include that.
Of course. We're going to have to cut it.
No, I think she should keep it in. A lot of Yoshi stones. As you probably already know, every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, our very important poll. If you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Question this week was, with classic video game cartridges, what is the best method to get them to work? Coming in third place was Wiggle 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 with 5.3%. Coming in second place, it was a Q-tip and solution with 40.5%. And winning it this week was Blow on Them with 46.3%.
You did this poll on purpose.
Of course I did. However, 7.9% of you said others. So let's take a look at comments from the poll. Tesserec Unfold said, screwdriver with a pencil eraser. If you can't get it open, a credit card machine cleaner card. At PhoneWave001 said, put it in a Game Genie. I did not know that would work. At Collect or Die says, nowadays I take apart and use fiberglass eraser on the metal pins. Gets them nice and shiny. I buy erasers on eBay. Jester Race 77 said, I do use Q-tips and isopropyl alcohol, I assume. Now I use those 1-Up cards. Cleans the contacts quite nicely. And then finally, Shift Happens Pod says, just yell at it and try again.
You see how lazy you're being?
So taking a look at this week's poll, Blue, what are you going with?
Well, those of us who have grown up, we know that the proper thing to do is to get out, if the game repeatedly won't work, get out the Q-tip, get out the cleaning solution, and actually take care of the problem. But I'm going to bet, what do most of us really do? We just blow on it. Because it worked every time when we were kids. And it's a pain in the ass to get out the stuff to clean it properly. So I'm not ashamed to admit that I'll still blow on them.
What I love about that is that we all had different reasons as to why we thought the blowing worked. Mm-hmm. And the one I subscribed to was, oh, you were blowing the dust off of it. Come to find out, I think the actual answer is that you're blowing spit onto the contact. So it's making a better connection.
Which in the long run is not good for the cartridge.
Correct. Correct. So Donnie, what about you?
I'm going to mirror what Blue said, but to compound on that, it basically just it depends on how lazy you feel, right? All of these are good options. They're great options, in fact. Now, you can wiggle it. There's times when I have to, you know, kind of finesse the NES cart or even the Super Nintendo cart into my system and like forcibly put it in and kind of like just jam it in there and it works. Other times I take it out, blow on it, put it back in. It works. So all of these are great viable options. It just depends on how productive you want to be with it.
The level of lazy dictates how you handle this problem.
Exactly. What about you, Ryan?
As a kid, I was unaware of the wiggle and the Q-tip method. I was unaware of that. I just blew, right? It was all...
right? You're not blowing on them.
Right. I was little boy blue. And so... when I became an adult, I started watching, you know, retro gaming YouTube, and they were talking about putting Windex on a Q-tip and kind of, you know, going at it with the Q-tip and Windex. Some people say isopropyl alcohol, even though it's funny on the back of it, it says specifically do not put corrosive things on the pins. But you know what? This is America. So we don't listen to warning labels. Come on. And... one of the things that, as I have gotten further into it, a collecting piece is that you find cartridges that just take a lot in order to get them to work. Yeah. So, you know, the eraser method is probably one I've had the most success with carts that just, for one reason or another, you know, you throw a Q-tip, you do the wiggle method, you blow on them, they're not working. The eraser is going to do it for you. My dad had a thing of contact solution or contact cleaner as well. That works, but I'm always kind of nervous to use that. Mm-hmm. All right. Especially if it's an expensive game. But I don't know how many times I've gotten a game from somebody that goes, oh, it just doesn't work. You know, you can have it because it doesn't work. Get it home. They're like, oh, works perfectly fine for me. Thank you.
Right. You didn't take the extra time to fiddle with this. And now your loss is my gain.
Exactly.
All right, let's take a look at our patron shout-outs.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Rai Rai's secret best friend, Mega Retroman, Gamatroid, Mora Deeb, Michael LeKite, Emo-esque, Phil Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcakes Pickled Pepper, Ducks with Thick Thighs, Wizard of Zardoz, Bops and Dugnut, Loud Moth, Retro Blast Pat, Great Siaman 81, BNT Zella Guy, The Mad Milkman, Seven Castle Forest, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnear, Dungi Forever, Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Matto 1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Red Ox, PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Boys Fan, Sassy Sony, and Evo Lust. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, and now let's take a look at the headlines for the week. Our headlines segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic, family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're playing through Impossible Mission and Zillion. Visit them at RetroGameClub.net or follow the link in the show notes. I am not familiar with Zillion.
No, I've got nothing.
It's a Sega Master System game, if I remember right. It's got one of those really, really great front covers, right, where it's the grid and then just like slap a small little picture of gameplay on there and then the Sega logo.
Okay, I have to take a look through my Master System games and see if I actually have it. I don't think I do, but yeah, classic marketing, gotta love it.
All right, first off, from Gamerant, Xbox gamers not happy about full screen ads. Xbox gamers seem to be growing increasingly upset about the appearance of ads on the Xbox dashboard, and they're making their feelings known online. Microsoft is seemingly escalating its use of advertisements on the Xbox dashboard, and is even delivering full-screen ads on startup. These ads largely feature messages that are expected on a console, such as previews of upcoming games and announcements for recent Xbox Developer Direct Showcase. Still, many players hold the opinion that when they jump on their console, they want to start playing games immediately rather than viewing ads about other titles. On Twitter, some Xbox users are seeing this as a trend and are expressing an annoyance as well as concern that Microsoft will continue with this policy into the future. Some are also pointing out that given that they paid for the console and that many are paying for related subscription services, throwing ads on top seems unfair. The latest controversy follows news last summer that Xbox gamers are frustrated by dashboard changes that direct attention to the online store and away from the games. Combined, these recent developments do seem to point to a pattern of Xbox seeking to promote new sales at the cost of convenience to console owners. Whether Xbox responds to complaints by backtracking or committing to a decrease in advertisement remains to be seen. It's worth noting that in the past, some companies have changed their policy regarding ads in response to complaints. For example, last year, Roblox made big changes to ads in the game by removing ads for NFTs and blocking them altogether for users under the age of 13 after questions were raised about its practices.
And how much did, what's his name, say that they could...
80% Sorrento.
80% with, okay, you knew exactly what I was talking about.
But you know, that wasn't in the book. It was in the movie. Right?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't in the book. Yeah. I'm glad that we've made that distinction.
I find it so obnoxious. So recently I was watching, I think, stuff on Peacock, right? It's a service I pay for. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't upset when the football games were on Peacock, but it's a service that I use. And watching a lengthier movie on it. They have you sit through like 3 minutes of ads before the movie plays.
Oh.
Right. Now, the thing is, they're saying, well, you'll sit through the ads and then you won't have to see the ads sparsed in throughout the movie, which, you know, there's like an advantage to that, if you will. It sucks, though. It's boring. And you see like that number come up for how many seconds and you realize that, you know, it's like 240, 280 seconds. You're like, are you freaking kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Right. When they measure it in seconds and it makes it seems worse.
Right. Exactly. It's like why, you know, centimeters and inches, depending on what you're measuring, can either seem a lot better or a lot worse.
Right. Right.
So that depends on when you want to use metric or imperial for, you know, ego standpoint, whatever. Anyway, the point being, though, is this is it's kind of a pervasive thing that we see in other media. And we already know that people are annoyed with it, but we just accept it. We don't do anything about it. And yes, Xbox owners are certainly going on social media and expressing their dislike for this. But is there anything that they can truly do? Because let's be honest, your average Xbox owner, they're not a monolith. They're not a group of people who come together as often as even, I would say, like PlayStation fans are much more, I'll say, together than Xbox fans are. So what can they do to have an impact on this?
Well, it's the same thing for PlayStation owners. If Sony decided to do this, in all reality, what could the average video game console owner do if the respective manufacturer of that console decided to start invading your space with ads?
Well, and here's the thing is that Sony does basically do this. Your home screen on PS5 is essentially, it's a store. It's full of suggestions of games you should like, new stuff that's coming out in the store. If there's any events coming up, there's a little ad for it. Mm-hmm. And at least to Sony's defense, it's all their stuff. And it's somewhat targeted to you based on your previous play history, but there's still a lot of stuff. Like, they keep insisting on letting me know about Call of Duty, but I suppose Mr. Blue has purchased it in the past, so I'll give them a pass on that.
Yeah,
but
there's a reason for that one.
Even though it's on my profile, though. They're not splitting it up by profiles, is the thing.
Man, I'm glad Nintendo doesn't do that with my purchase of Hentai World. That would be really embarrassing.
Yet. Switch 2. You never know what they're going to do.
It's coming.
So it seems like this is the new gen of consoles. This is the new way of doing things, is that instead of a home screen where we used to be able to put, you know, wallpapers of our choice and see listing of icons of games that we own and things like this, now you have to sift through ads to get to the stuff that you actually own. And it seems like where Xbox has stepped over the line and really annoyed people is instead of having just kind of the regular dashboard of ads, they popped up something full screen that you actively had to exit out of.
Oof.
Right. Right. It's not one of those, you know, what you typically see on a website, like the bumper thing on the right hand side, mm-hmm. where it's got an ad that you can just ignore or have to turn off the sound for, which I can't stand, by the way.
Where is the sound coming
right,
from?
Right, exactly. Try to read an article and you go, whoa.
Actually, just because of this article, you just reminded me that I needed to cancel my Xbox Live subscription.
There you go.
Thank you.
People helping people. It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Look at us.
You know what, though? This is an interesting reminder because we're in a state right now where even Ubisoft is telling us that we have to get comfortable with this idea of not owning our own games. It's starting to get to the point where we don't own our own home screen on right. the thing that we bought. Oof.
Well, and a lot of the response, like I've seen tweets responding to this, and some of them are saying like, this feels like when you buy an Amazon Kindle, you have a choice to buy one that's way cheaper if you agree to have it full of ads, which sucks. Right. But at least they're upfront about it. Do you want your Kindle half price, or I don't know what the price difference is, but do you want it half price and it'll just be full of ads while you're trying to read? And that's a thing that people can do, and some people do it. But it's basically, it's a way of, I mean, traditionally, ads are a way of subsidizing something that you haven't paid for. You pay right. instead with, you know, supposedly your attention on this ad. But it is becoming to the point where the definition of an ad is completely changing. It's no longer to subsidize something that you didn't purchase. Now it's being added on and spoon-fed to you, even on the things that we've paid for, even on subscriptions, like you were talking about with Peacock and with our Xbox home screens. There is no way to pay to opt out of ads anymore. And it is an interesting question whether are we all just going to roll over and take it? And if not, what can we do about it? The only thing that companies ever listen to is their bottom line.
Right.
And I don't know if this is a big enough issue for the collective gamer space that's going to make them say, nope, we're not going to buy your console.
Those people, they already bought it.
That's what
right.
I was
gonna say.
Xbox already had their $600, and for most households, that's way too big of a purchase to just get rid of on this kind of moral issue. Agreed. You need to get your money's worth out of that $600 because it was a sacrifice of something else to be able to purchase it.
And the thing is, it's probably about halfway through its console life, if not more, right? So they're not probably raking in as many console buys as they saw before. So yeah, they could take a small dent from somebody who was contemplating picking up an Xbox, decides not to go with it because of ads, but it's not going to be that profound or groundbreaking for them to lose a few here and there. And let's be honest, unless you're paying attention to either social media or the news, you're not going to hear about this before you purchase your Xbox.
So does this mean that, well, let's say you buy the console, but you don't subscribe to any of their online subscription services. Are you still going to see ads on your home space?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Gross.
You know what the worst part too is not only did you buy the console, now you don't have control over what the ads are that are going to be on it. And they are gathering your own personal data and how you play games and all that kind of stuff. And they're selling it to data brokers. So they're making money off of your data, the ads, and the console buy. Man, they are laughing all the way to the bank.
They really are. The only way to stop it is to not buy in the first place. And for most of us, we don't know if that's worth it because we're gamers. We want to play games.
Right. And of course, now what they purchased every single developer in the world, you're going to talk about exclusives. So you have to go with Xbox if you want to play that one game.
Well, if you go with PlayStation, they're just as bad.
Oh, of course. I'm not saying Xbox is like, you know, the overwhelming villain here. Every company is, they're essentially like that toddler that just continuously tries to push the boundaries to see how far it'll go, you know? Like, okay, can I get away with this? Can I get away? Oh, I'm getting away with this. Let's push it a little bit further. Let's push it a little bit further.
Well, it's essentially like springing this gotcha trap on you, right? They wait until you buy the product. Like, let's say it's a video game and you've bought the product, you've opened it up, so you can't turn it back. You put the disc in and boom, here's a 34-page end user license agreement. You have no choice but to agree to it. Mm-hmm. You didn't know it was there. But if you don't agree, then the purchase you just made is void.
Right. You can't use the product. You can't do anything with it.
Right. And it's the same like what we talked about last week with Ubisoft. You buy the Ubisoft game, but if you don't make the account, you can't use it.
And it seems like this really started rearing its head around the time of the Xbox 360 and the PS3. Because the PS3, you'd sign in and said, oh, well, we noticed an update. Now you're forced to actually download this update. Otherwise, you can't play anything.
Yeah. That's true.
And it's like, wait a second. I don't really want to do the update because the features I like on this particular version of the iOS, they're fine for me. Plus, like the older models of the PS3, you could actually put Linux on them.
I was just about to say that they're trying to limit your ability to actually have fun with your
console. Like, I bought it for this specific purpose. Now you're telling me that's no longer an option. Well, okay, collective lawsuit. Here's your $3.50. Gotcha.
Right. Or I love the thing that my Samsung phone does, where it gives me a pop-up, it seems like every 2 weeks, agree to the new terms of use. And you can't dismiss it. You literally have no choice to say no. As soon as you touch the notification to get it off your screen, you've agreed.
And let's be honest, nobody reads that.
I would.
No, it's full of legalese. That's the problem, is that unless you're a lawyer, you more than likely will not understand it or get to the point where it's just such a repetitive thing. Legalese is intended to do that.
I know it isn't intended to lull you into being stupid, but if you scan it, you can kind of get the gist of what they're telling you they own your soul for.
Your soul is mine. Samsung, the new Shang Tsung.
You know what? Joke's on you. Gingers don't have souls.
Ah, well played. Well played.
She's already dead inside.
Yep. Nothing you can do about it. All right. Next up from Destructoid, Final Fantasy VII Advent Children heads back to U.S. theaters ahead of Rebirth. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is right around the corner on February 29th, so Square Enix is capitalizing on the thirst for more Cloud and Sephiroth with special screenings of the CG-animated Final Fantasy VII Advent Children film a week ahead of launch. Originally released nearly two decades ago in 2005, the Tetsuya Nomura-directed feature is characteristically over-the-top look at the world of Final Fantasy VII 2 years after the events of the original game. The film's return to theaters is the result of a collaboration between Square Enix, Fathom Events, and Sony Pictures. It will mark the first time for the Final Fantasy VII Advent Children Complete Director's Cut version to hit cinemas. The screenings will be in theaters for just 2 days. Those who want to see Cloud's Buster Sword in the largest format possible.
Say what now?
Yeah, giggity. Can check out the English dubbed version on February 21st, followed by the subtitled version on February 22nd. The director's cut is a whopping 26 minutes longer than the theatrical release, packing in various visual improvements and around 1,000 updated scenes. The story finds a mysterious new illness spreading quickly throughout the world, bringing old enemies back out of the woodwork and forcing Cloud to pick up his impossibly heavy blade and get back into action. If you do decide to head to the theater for this one next month, Square Enix wants you to prepare for a history lesson before the lights dim. Folks who show up early will be treated to exclusive introductory content, like the history of Final Fantasy VII, how it connects to Advent Children, interviews with Tetsuya Nomura and Rebirth director Naoki Hamaguchi, and more.
I am so doing this.
Admit it, the two of you are running off to see Cloud's a larger-than-life Buster Sword, aren't you?
You know it.
I loved Advent Children when it came out because I was heavily invested in the whole Cloud versus Sephiroth dynamic from Final Fantasy VII. The one, I guess the first Final Fantasy movie, the animated movie that came out in the early 2000s, I don't remember the name of it. Do you guys remember? It was like, had nothing to do with Final Fantasy whatsoever, almost.
I think it was just called Final Fantasy.
Okay.
No, I think I know what you're talking about. Final Fantasy. What was it called? Final Fantasy. Spirits Within. Spirits Within.
Okay. She got it before the buzzer.
Out of curiosity, how do you spell out Final Fantasy?
That's the noise my brain makes when the wheel is spinning. You just need to give it some time.
I do like it how the author of this article in the first paragraph, first and second paragraph, he used the term theater. Okay. And then he throws in a random cinema. Who uses the word cinema anymore?
A writer who's been instructed to throw in some different terms.
Hello, my dear. Would you like to accompany me to the cinema this evening? It's like, what? No, get away from me, you creep.
We'll see a talkie together.
A talking picture show.
Gee willikers, can we get some popcorn and some sarsaparilla?
Sarsaparilla. I will say this, though. I think for me, at least, I watched Final Fantasy Advent Children. I didn't see it in theaters, but I saw it pretty much as soon as it was available for DVD release. Loved it then. Was huge into it. Watched it a billion times. I don't know, though, whether I would appreciate it as much today. Looking back at it, and I'm going to be a little critical here, but it's like Dragon Ball Z mixed with Final Fantasy at certain points, which is fine. Don't get me wrong. I just don't know if it necessarily captured completely my nostalgia for it. But that being said, never seen the director's cut, so I am 100% in on this. I will likely go to see the English dub and the subtitled version.
Oh, super nerd.
Super nerd.
But see, here's the thing. You know Tetsuya Nomura. You know what he is most famous for, right?
Of course not.
Of course not. No. Do you want to know why it maybe didn't capture the spirit of Final Fantasy VII the way you saw it? The way that touched what you knew about it?
Go on.
Because he is the guy who directed all of Kingdom Hearts.
There it is.
The truth shall set you free.
So I have a hunch you're not going to like the director's cut anymore than the regular one.
What the fuck is Donald Duck doing in this movie?
If you replaced Cloud with Donald Duck, I think I would be a little bit more excited for this release.
Yeah, I did go see both Spirits Within and Advent Children in the theaters at the time, but I'm going to be honest, they're kind of mushed together in my brain. I probably don't remember anything specific about either one.
I remember how badass it looked for Cloud to be chafing.
Those leather pants, man, they're no joke.
I saw a pair. Okay, off topic. I saw a pair of leather pants at American Eagle the other day when I was taking my son clothes shopping. And for a split second, I thought about grabbing a pair.
But, oh, really? Real leather pants?
No, it's like faux leather or pleather or whatever. But still, you know, I think I need to try it at least once.
Where would you wear those out of curiosity?
Around the house, around the neighborhood, going for a walk to the local nightclub. I don't know. To the cinema? But back to the topic at hand. One of the things I do remember from Advent Children is Cloud is chasing Sephiroth. And they're like, Sephiroth is up top of this like tall structure or building or whatnot. And all of the members of Cloud's party are helping him. Like they'll grab him and throw him up, right? And then the next person of the party will grab him from below and then slingshot him up further. And they're collectively doing that to where he finally reaches up to Sephiroth. I think, if I'm wrong, please correct me, but then him and Sephiroth get into a fight.
Correct. You're correct.
Okay. So I remember that part, but that's about the only thing I remember from it.
It's a little emo-y for my taste. Like I said, it's like Dragon Ball Z a little bit too. Maybe like the last Matrix movie as well.
Ooh, Matrix 4?
Three.
No.
Four doesn't exist.
Yeah. I was like, what is that?
It's still in the
three
franchise.
Three was real bad, but four does not exist.
Of course. Three sucked and four was interesting, but can't say that it doesn't exist.
I can. And I did.
Well, you can't. You'd be wrong.
I reject your reality and substitute my own.
Next up from Dexerto, Florida Joker demands he plays Grand Theft Auto 6 character in latest Rockstar callout. Since the first trailer for Grand Theft Auto 6 was released, the anticipation for the game has been over the roof. Fans have been hard at work looking for clues that will lead them to the forthcoming Rockstar game based in Vice City, and they've been vocal about their anticipation. A number of real-life incidents from Miami, Florida were recreated in the trailer, which featured a convicted felon who looked like the real-life Florida Joker, Lawrence Sullivan. Sullivan has been threatening to sue Rockstar Games over the use of his likeness in GTA 6 since the unveiling, claiming that the company will not pay him up for the rights. Now that he has waited more than a month for an answer from Rockstar, Florida Joker claims he deserves credit and that they should let him voice the character in GTA 6. Florida Joker has made a sixth video asking that Rockstar Games and Take-Two Interactive give him credit for the likeness of a similar character in GTA 6, following five previous video attempts to reach out to the companies. However, in the latest video, Sullivan has a new demand from Rockstar and Take-Two in which he says, "I'm not trying to sue you.
Where's my money? Call me. Let's make this deal happen. I ain't trying to do all this lawsuit, lawyers, all this and that, but if I got to, I will. Y'all got a month to hit me up. Let me voice the character. Throw me some bread. Let's work. GTA, we gotta talk. Take-Two, where my money at? Let's go."
Furthermore, he tries once again to convince them by saying, "Y'all see what I did for the game? We made news. We made the blogs. Everybody loves me, man." While both fans and existing Rockstar Games actors have slammed Sullivan for their ridiculous threats, several users turned in their views on his latest demand. One such user said, "It would be hilarious if it turns out that this guy and Rockstar have actually started this as a weird viral marketing campaign up to the release of the game." And I wouldn't put anything past anybody with that statement.
No, at this point, anything could be real. Who even
right.
knows?
So I'm not a lawyer. I don't pretend to be a lawyer. I know that as far as using somebody's likeness in something where you make money off of that, you have to get explicit permission from somebody like that, correct?
I believe so.
So how is this different in this case from Rockstar and Take-Two Interactive? When they look at the Florida headlines, right, their trailer is rife with all headlines straight from Florida news, Florida man and everything. And they've taken this guy and said, "Okay, we're going to put this guy in the video game and yada, yada, yada. There he is. Hey, looks exactly like that guy. He's got the facial tattoos. Yeah, that's him, but it's really not him because it's a video game and yada, yada, yada." How is that legal for them to do that?
Well, I think there's something about being a public figure that you're allowed to be opened up to parody. Again, not a lawyer. We should consult the Gamers Week law group office. But from what I've read, lawyers have said, "Bud, give it up. You don't have a leg to stand on here." So
I was looking up who is this guy, right? And the only thing I'm getting are like, it looks like mugshots.
Yeah. That's what he's most famous for, is that damn mugshot. That's the only thing he's really done.
So is he still in jail?
I don't think so. I don't think you can TikTok from jail.
You'd be surprised. And is the Gamers Week to Podcast legal department only open on Sunday nights from 11:45 to 11:48 p.m.?
That's the only time we can afford to have them open.
Okay. All right.
That's our retainer limit.
Right. But I do like the part where he's like, you know what? I'm going to give you guys another month. I'm going to be generous to give you guys another month to think about all the millions of dollars you need to pay me. Like, that's very nice of you, Mr. Florida Joker.
I'm going to grant you an extension.
They're going to mail him like a strip of gum and be like, here's your compensation.
Right. That would probably be the worst thing they could do, is actually acknowledge him in any way.
But to your point, I think likeness is one thing. Parody is, obviously you can parody somebody. There's also that, like, if it's slightly different, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not immediately recognizable as the Florida Joker, they can get away with it as well. Or if they do that thing like South Park does, it says on the like disclaimer, any person that's involved in this that happens to seem like the likeness of someone else, that was not done intentionally, so don't sue us.
Right. Even in the episodes where they call out celebrities by name.
Correct. Yeah, like Kanye West.
That wasn't intentional.
And Tom Cruise.
Yep. Oprah, all those.
I'm a gay fish.
You like fish sticks?
But also they can't pay him because they parodied a lot of real life Florida events in that trailer. So they would be paying out the wazoo if they said this is a thing we're willing to pay for.
Yeah, right. That would open the floodgates.
Yep.
Class action lawsuit against Rockstar for using our stuff.
The entire state of Florida sues.
Well, Donnie, you could sue for like Vice City, where it had like some of that 90s aesthetic to it.
I own the fashion from the 90s?
No, I'm just saying that you could claim that one character was you, right? Mm-hmm. You could be like, look, that's me. I dress like that all the time.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure like with all the pixelated goodness of the PS2, I could say, you see that little speck right there in the face? That's me. Like that resembles me perfectly.
I'm that NPC right there. Yeah.
All right, next up, let's take a look at our top three new releases for the week.
First up is Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth on the PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Two larger-than-life heroes, Ichiban Kasuga and Kazuma Kiru, are brought together by the hand of fate, or perhaps something more sinister. Live it up in Japan and explore all that Hawaii has to offer in an RPG adventure so big it spans the Pacific. Experience one-of-a-kind combat with dynamic, fast-paced RPG battles, where the battlefield becomes your weapon and anything goes. Adapt your party's skill to the situation with outlandish jobs and customization to strategically subdue enemies with over-the-top moves. Next up is Apollo Justice Ace Attorney Trilogy, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Join rookie attorney Apollo Justice and his mentor, the legendary Phoenix Wright, in this collection of three games. This title features the 14 episodes of Apollo Justice Ace Attorney, Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Dual Destinies, and Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Spirit of Justice, and two previously DLC-only special episodes for a total of 16 episodes. Immerse yourself in this beautiful collection as you shout out, "Objection!" in this newly renovated Hall of Justice. And lastly, Tekken 8 for PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. No Switch, huh? Holding a record for the longest-running video game storyline, the Tekken series begins a new chapter as Tekken 8 continues the tragic saga of Mishima and Kazama bloodlines. The new battle system, Heat, dials up the aggressive nature of battles while maintaining the play and feel and tactics unique to the Tekken series. In this new single-player mode arcade quest, craft your own unique avatar and embark on your new Tekken life. Battle your way through a variety of rivals across multiple arcades as this story unfolds, all while mastering the basics and practical skills in Tekken 8. So if we're looking at these three, Blue, what are you in for this week?
Actually, this is a week where I would consider all of these games. Mm. I have never played a Yakuza game, though I own several. And yes, that is one of the big glaring spots on my backlog is why haven't you done this? But Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth is apparently getting the best review scores of any Yakuza game ever. So I guess it's amazing. And I think it would be great to play it, though I don't know if I would want to start there, though. That's kind of the big thing. Similarly, I have never played a Phoenix Wright game, though everybody knows the objection punchline of it. This seems like a great way to kind of get a good feel for the series. It seems like a lot of content in one little collection, which would be great. But let's talk about the game I actually pre-ordered, which was Tekken 8. Big Tekken fan, really looking forward to this for a long time. And it seems like they just dialed up the bonkers quality to 11, because in the I played the demo, and like the first thing that happens is Jin Kazama is riding a motorcycle through an abandoned town, abandoned-ish town, chasing Heihachi in his helicopter. So Jin rides the motorcycle up the side of a skyscraper, and then when he gets to the top, he just throws the motorcycle at the helicopter, and it crashes and flames everywhere, and battle ensues. I was like, what the hell am I even watching? And that's Tekken. That's just how Tekken is. So I'm really looking forward to it, playing it this weekend.
Awesome. Very cool. Donnie, what about you?
But you don't actually get to drive the motorcycle up the mountain and throw it at someone. You just
no,
fight.
No, up the skyscraper.
You up just the skyscraper. Fight, yes, but even better. Like a dragon. Hey! Looking for that infinite wealth. I have never played a Yakuza game ever. I don't know if I would be willing to invest in a new particular type of game like that. So I can't say I would instantly pick Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, but it's still on the list. I have never played a Phoenix Wright game. I've seen all of the ads for it, all of the memes and everything like that. But with Tekken, you know exactly what you're getting. It's a great fighting game. It's a great fighting franchise up there with Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, of course. So I don't think I've ever been disappointed by a Tekken game. I just don't know if I'm in a rush to jump out and buy this game on launch, because I know exactly what I'm getting with Tekken. And I know Blue said that she pre-ordered it, so she's seen all the wackiness and everything like that that's involved with it. I don't know if that's going to be enough to make me run out and play it. But if I had to pick one, it would probably be Tekken 8, because I know the franchise well. I know what to expect from the game.
Makes you feel like if you were single and you were looking to have a little fun one night, you'd be like, should I contact that new girl I met at the bar, or should I just call my ex? And you call your ex because you're like, I know what,
you know what you're going to get. Oh.
You are not wrong.
So what about you, Ryan? What are you picking this week?
So Ace Attorney has never captured my imagination or anything. I just, for some reason or another, and you know what's strange is you would expect someone of my gaming caliber to love something like this, you know, where I like nerdy, like business simulator type of games, but something about it, it's just, it's...
Is it the anime? Say it's the anime.
It's actually not. It's just the concept, I guess. I've never wanted to be a lawyer, so I've never had the dream or desire to do that.
Objection!
Yeah. You lawyer paper all day long!
So that goes Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, or Tekken 8. Tekken is a series that I've never, not never, it's just recently I haven't gotten into. So there's a little bit of that feeling like, is this something where it's just a little bit too daunting to learn the movesets and do all that kind of stuff? But from my experience, Tekken is well balanced. So I can still probably get away with some button mashing at first and then ease my way into it. Definitely not playing online ever in fighting games.
No. That's crazy.
That is a humbling experience, let's say that. But Like a Dragon seems pretty interesting. There are some red flags, though, for me. And it's the job system. And the different jobs that you can be are kind of lame. I gotta be honest with you. You can be like a go-go dancer or a fire dancer or a surfing dude. Like, that's okay.
Or a tax accountant.
Yeah. Right. Like,
I know you've had dreams about being a go-go dancer.
You know, I like to try to keep my private life private, but you keep drawn it out of me at this podcast, and now everyone knows.
It seems to be your private life as soon as you told us.
He's a private dancer.
So in that sense, I think had to make a choice, one of these three, I would probably go with Tekken 8 just to, you know, because of Donnie, it's a similar logic here. It's familiar. I know what to expect walking in. And even if I don't like it, at least I won't be, I guess, disappointed in that sense. So,
hey, Tekken 8, you come home with me. I don't think you're old news.
Well, to kind of contradict what Ryan was saying, it's not like Tekken 8 is the X. Because, yes, we know exactly what we're getting, but it's new. It's new. It's Tekken 8. So maybe...
So it's the X with a makeover showed up at the bar? You know yes. what to expect, but it's in a different package?
Yes.
It's your twin sister.
I don't think you're going to save yourself here.
No, let's just move on. And with that, we're segueing into the main topic for the week.
All right, from The Guardian, Pokemon with Guns, Why Pow World Could Become 2024's Biggest Game. The new year has barely begun, but it seems we already have 2024's biggest game, and it's not a multi-million dollar sci-fi extravaganza set in a vast universe created by a gigantic publisher. Ooh, I wonder who they're calling out.
Ooh.
It's a survival adventure released by a small company in Japan, which had only previously released one game. It's called Pow World, and it's being accurately described as Pokemon with Guns. And if that sounds horrible to you, it seems you are very much alone. Within 3 days of its release on January 18th, it had sold 5 million copies. Developed by a Tokyo-based Pocket Pair, Pow World belongs to a genre known as survival adventures, in which players are cast into an inhospitable open-world environment and have to, yes, survive by finding food and shelter, crafting tools, and of course, fighting enemies, whether they're space aliens or hungry wolves. Minecraft is perhaps the most famous example, but titles such as Rust, Ark, Don't Starve, and Subnautica are all competing in a similar space. You control a character who arrives in a lush open-world environment known as the Palpagos Islands, and must survive by farming, cooking, building shelters, and combating various enemy factions. Also living in this world are more than 100 different types of cute creatures named Pals, which all have their own abilities. You can capture these cute beasts and either use them to battle your foes or put them to work in your base crafting useful items.
Get back to work!
Much of the game involves exploring the world, looking for pals and resources. It's important to monitor your hunger levels and to gather resources. As you fight enemies using your captured pals, you unlock new crafting recipes working your way through a varied technology tree. You can either play alone, or if you choose the PC version, you can choose to go online with up to 31 other so-called pal tamers. It's funny, it's silly, and it's weirdly engrossing, even though all the separate elements are so recognizable. Some feel that Pokemon developer Game Freak has been too reticent to really shake up its aging series over the last 5 years, and that Pow World is the modern incarnation long-term fans have been crying out for. It's certainly gone down very well with lots of top video game influencers, becoming the number one game on streaming platform Twitch within a day of its release. The game has been extremely controversial, not only for its similarities to Pokemon, with some developers accusing the developer of plagiarism with its creature designs, but also its use of tropes and conventions from other successful survival games, especially Ark and Rust. However, the people responsible for Pokemon, Nintendo, creatures, and the Pokemon Company have not yet commented. Although Don McGowan, who managed the Pokemon Company's legal team for a decade, recently told news site Gamefile, "This looks like the usual rip-off nonsense that I would see 1,000 times a year when I was chief legal officer at Pokemon. I'm just surprised it got this far." For his part, Pocket Pair's CEO and lead developer, Takuro Mizobi, has claimed that the game has been checked against legal requirements and that it isn't infringing copyright.
Also, Pokemon is not the only game based around monster hunting. Other titles such as Digimon and Monster Rancher have existed for years alongside it, and the whole genre is based on the popular Japanese hobby of insect collecting. So it's certainly not a concept that can be protected. History of video games is a history of successful ideas being borrowed and improved, with most modern genres traceable to one or two massively successful progenitors. There has also been debate over whether or not the studio has used AI-generated art to create its assets without informing platforms or players. Mizobi has expressed an interest in AI art generation in the past, but there is currently no evidence that Pocket Pair has used AI models in this way. The game is technically still in development, but the bugs are being ironed out. However, if you have a PC, you can download the early access version on Steam for $30. You can also play a preview version on Xbox, but this version is even less stable and currently doesn't feature the 32-player online mode. You can play cooperatively with two to four players. If the idea of cute mini monsters wielding machine guns is your thing, you know where to go. Can I say first things first? Pocket Pair, yiggity.
It's a Japanese company.
Then they should have made it a portmanteau.
There's something in translation that was just, it didn't go as smoothly as maybe they hoped.
I got your Pocket Pair right here.
So I guess, are we living in the era now where the games that we think are going to be the big hits for the year end up fizzling out, and then everybody falls in love with these, I'll say, nothing games that came out of nowhere? Like last year was Baldur's Gate 3. Right, nobody saw it coming, and it ended up winning Game of the Year. And then Pokemon with Guns has been nothing but a punchline since we first heard about it. But now that it's out, everybody loves it.
Did Baldur's Gate 3 really come out of nowhere? I feel like Pow World has come out of nowhere.
I mean, it's not like anybody was like, oh, Baldur's Gate 3 is going to be a thing that's going to come out. Like, nobody talked about it.
Well, okay. And then, like, years before, it was like Fallout Guys came out of absolutely nowhere. And then it was like this phenomenon for 6 months. Everybody was playing it. When Among Us came out years before that, it was the hot game of the moment and everybody was playing it. So it's not without precedence, per se. The one thing I think that's different about this is that it's not a party genre game, necessarily. It's a fully fleshed out game, is what it sounds like. So that makes it interesting, to say the least. But one of the things I do like about this is that it's providing some competition for a genre or a franchise that has had almost no real competition for its entire existence. And usually, when competition happens, that leads to better outcomes for the future. So Pokemon sees that Pale World is doing something that's unique and interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe they won't rest on their laurels, because I got to be honest with you, they come out with a new Pokemon every couple of years, and it's Pokemon.
Sometimes more than one.
But sure, right? And it's two games you got to buy, which sucks. Right? That's terrible already. And it's always the name convention is some kind of object or planet or whatever, right?
Color.
And a color, sure. Color was the big one for years, right?
Mm-hmm. And then we went to gems.
And the thing about Pokemon, though, is that aesthetically, it hasn't made a whole lot of jumps for a franchise that's been around that long. Where Pale World looks a lot better, especially if you're talking about the environments, right? Not necessarily the pails that you receive yourself or your character don't necessarily look that much more robust than what Pokemon is offering, but the landscapes do. It feels like you're playing in a much more dedicated game to a modern console versus what Pokemon is putting out looks like it belongs on two generations before.
And I've heard that complaint a lot about the lack of polish, like especially when you look at the more recent Pokemon releases, Scarlet and Violet and Pokemon Legends Arceus, where they just kind of appear to be these big, dead, open environments that, like you said, look like they belong a couple generations ago, as opposed to what one of the most renowned video game developers on the planet could really be doing when they tried. I mean, you slap Pokemon Legends Arceus next to Tears of the Kingdom and compare the worlds, and it's like, did you even try? We know it can be done. The only excuse seems to be at some point they are just so used to everything that they put out being a massive success that they don't see any need to really polish it anymore.
All you had to do was copy off of Tears of the Kingdom's homework. That's all you had to do.
You could have just transplanted the map, slapped some Pokemon in it, call it good.
Right. Absolutely.
Pretty much. But the fact that this company has come out and put this game out and people are saying, oh, it looks exactly like Pokemon. These creatures and beasts look exactly like what you would see in a Pokemon game, but they're not quite like that. They decided to mix and match and do their own creativeness and whatnot, and they put out this new game. But to your point, Ryan, this now leads Nintendo to say, well, maybe we could do something different with our Pokemon and maybe make it a shooter like this, or maybe make it a hunter thing, whatever. We can change it up and people would love to see that because it's the Pokemon franchise. Do you think that would light a fire underneath their ass to go and do it? Or do you think they're just happy with like, eh, in 2 more years, we'll put out Pokemon Black Onyx and here you go.
I don't think Squeaky Queen Nintendo is ever going to put guns in the hands of any of their, unless it's like a squidling gun or something.
There you go. Actually, you know, it's funny that you say that because the style of shooter and that this is a kind of third person perspective that you see reminds me, and even like the weapons and stuff, like the sub weapons, it all reminds me of Splatoon, which playing Splatoon enough, there's part of me that goes, I'm going to be good at this game.
Well, I read an article earlier that because there's so few Japanese shooters, that this company had the hardest time trying to find a developer who could design that aspect of the game. Like, they just don't exist over there. And eventually they did find this guy who was like a gun enthusiast working at a convenience store.
That is awesome. Imagine that's like the dream of every guy who's a clerk at a convenience store. They walk in, they're like, yo, we heard you like guns.
Come design video games.
And he lived happily ever after. One of the other things I will say is that, Donnie, to your point, even if it doesn't light a fire under Nintendo, maybe this is the kind of battle royale craze that has existed for the past couple of years where everyone and their mother has made some kind of version of a 99 versus all kind of thing. Maybe this genre is going to catch fire and more developers and more companies are going to see it as a viable option considering the popularity of Palworld. And then all of a sudden you've got the pick of the litter if this is what you're interested in. Whether that pertains to us, we didn't like battle royales anyway. So
we don't like survival games. We don't want Pokemon. We don't like battle royales. There's not really anything about this that says, hey, you guys need to play it.
But there are plenty of people who absolutely love Rust. They love Minecraft. I mean, if you go on right now onto YouTube, there's an entire genre of video where it's like 1,000 Rust players versus 1,000 Rust players. And that's all they do is they commentate on all the different like dynamics of the politics of it. Even Minecraft, too, is big on that. So this game kind of has that 31 other players. I'm sure that that'll eventually find its way to YouTube. We'll do stuff like that. And the game could explode. And eventually more and more developers are going to want to get in on that special sauce with, you know, Pocket Pair.
And Pocket Pair special sauce. I like it.
And maybe you'll see more of it. Who knows? But we're old. We're curmudgeons. It doesn't have to be for us, but.
No, it doesn't. And a lot of our patrons are really loving it, too.
Right. For sure. And you know what? I might check it out. I got to be honest. Just simply from the fact that it looks a lot like Splatoon. It'll feel it's the ex-girlfriend.
She ditched the braces and the glasses. All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast. The show explores the history of video games through stories and experiences of the everyday people who lived it. The podcast is currently on hiatus, but there are over 90 episodes in the backlog ready to be explored. This week, Bill recommends episode 79, The Man Behind the Box of Mega Man 2. In this episode, Bill chats with box artist Mark Erickson about his career, life designing artwork during the late 80s, and the legacy of his most famous, less than beloved creation. This week's question is, what is your favorite piece of video game box art? Let Bill know your answer by sending him a tweet at @agamerlooksat40 on Twitter. That is a very, very powerful question right there.
Agree.
And I'm going to go with Pong.
Have you ever given a serious answer to any of Bill's questions?
Maybe once or twice.
It's not the point of this.
It's what I love.
I'll go with a box art that like I stared at because there's just so much stuff going on in the background for the longest time as a kid, which was Turtles in Time. He's on that big, like, you know, hoverboard, right? And there's just like stuff happening in the background. It's all swirling around. Raphael looks overly muscular and angry. So I always love that one for sure.
I'm not sure I can really narrow it down to just one. There's so many great ones. Like, I think there is a lot of Atari cover art that was really amazing because they were trying so hard to sell you on the game. Like, I think Yar's Revenge cover art is amazing.
Agreed.
And then you get to the NES, and the one that always caught my attention as I walked past it in Blockbuster but was never allowed to rent it was Castlevania. Ooh. Such good cover art.
What I find interesting, too, is that depending on where you lived, the cover art could be completely different, right? So,
right.
Of course.
This guy made the box behind Mega Man 2, but Rockman 2 in Japan is totally different and totally weird. It's like this overly skinny guy, like, jumping up in the air, and it looks more photorealistic. Like, it's strange, to say the least. But
somebody got a good cover art for Mega Man 2, though.
I think
this is like
did.
Japan had their version, America had a version, I think Europe had a version, or am I making that up? I thought no, there were three different
right.
versions.
Yeah.
Well, like Mega Man, like the original Mega Man 1 had, like, you're looking at this character and you're like, what the hell is this?
the overweight to Mega Man with a actual pistol?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, did you play the game?
Do you need to?
I guess not.
It's like all those memes for medieval paintings. Like, I would like you to paint a horse. You've seen a horse, right? Yes.
All right, thank you for coming. Students, please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrandt's Gaming History 101. And in today's lesson, we discuss a group of individuals who use their knowledge of technology to disrupt the lives of many gamers and people in the gaming industry. We, of course, will be talking about the keyboard terrorist hacking group known as Lizard Squad. So usually I kind of focus on stuff that happens from like the early 2000s backward, but I found this group and this topic appealing enough, and it is technically in the past, so I'm not like completely breaking the rules of gaming history here. And to me, I think it was something that I was only tangentially aware of, but now getting a chance to do more research into it, I found out how strange and interesting the story was. So I definitely wanted to share. So
let's hear it.
Yeah. Ask any nerd about hacking, and they will most likely describe people who are working tirelessly behind the scenes and outside government control to take down the oppressive establishments. In fact, Hollywood has done a good job characterizing hackers and being outlaw keyboards or anti-heroes that work for the common people. From yelling, hack the planet! In the 90s movie Hackers, to saving the world from an alien invasion at Independence Day by somehow understanding their alien code.
Do not question the hacker.
To seeing Halle Berry's boobs on your way to disrupting cyber criminals' plots in the movie Swordfish.
Swordfish!
Yeah.
Epic hacking scene.
For sure. For sure.
I thought you were going to say epic boob scene.
Well, you're not wrong there. But
no. I just remembered being surprised by it, but pleasantly. Hacking has long been a fascination of people because of the portrayals of Robin Hood-esque nerds using their intelligence to outsmart the bad guys. However, the reality of hacking isn't so benevolent. While real-life hacking groups like Anonymous are often revered by the public, the Lizard Squad's activities were more about trolling and getting notoriety than having a political agenda. Now, Lizard Squad saw their first real activity in the 2010s. Most likely, the hackers involved with the Lizard Group got their start as being a part of the Black Hat Hacking Forum, Darkode. Black Hat Hacking, well, that's a tough phrase to say, is a term used for a hacker who violates computer security for little reason beyond maliciousness or for personal gain, as opposed to White Hat Hacking, who does so to help companies expose their weaknesses to potential threats. Now, Darkode started their site in 2007 on the dark web as a means for black hat hackers to discuss methods, request services, and brag about their exploits. Lizard Squad would later use the website to claim responsibility for their actions. Now, while there is no information out there as to why they chose the name Lizard Squad, at least from what I could find, they do use a logo that is an ASCII 2 lizard in a black top hat, tuxedo, and pipe. And they would put up on websites once they gain control, usually with a phrase that says, website hacked by Lizard Group.
That's it? That's so lame.
I know, right? Well, there's some others that you'll see here that they put up that are a little bit, we'll say, less sensitive than they should be. Now, the first real public activity attributed to the group began on August 18th of 2014, where they used a DDoS, DDoS, or distributed denial of service attack on the servers for the game League of Legends. A DDoS attack is when hackers flood a network with false requests to overwhelm the system in hopes that it will shut down. They accomplish this often by hacking into thousands and thousands of computers at one time to send requests from personal PCs to other Wi-Fi connected devices, even things like smart appliances. That's right, your fridge might be used in a DDoS attack. It would appear that the League of Legends attack was a warm-up for further attacks on gaming networks. On August 24th, another DDoS attack was made by the group on the PlayStation Network and temporarily disrupted services for gamers. For all intents and purposes, it would appear that this is a test of the network and its capabilities to fend off a DDoS. They would later attack both Destiny servers and Xbox Live servers with a DDoS attack in late November and early December. This eventually led to their biggest DDoS attack, the dreaded attack on Christmas of 2014. Attacking both PlayStation and Xbox servers on Christmas Day, they essentially shut down the networks, leading to millions of players with the inability to use their newly gifted consoles on the day they receive them. Relentlessly, they continued to attack throughout the entire day until 2 a.m. on the 26th of December. Now, this may seem like one of those first world problems that aren't a big deal, but I got to be honest with you, I empathize with anybody who happily opened their system, plugged it in, and found that they were unable to connect to the network, which was often a requirement to play many of the games that were available on both systems.
Can you imagine the little asshole kid that went off on his mom or dad? It's like, I can't believe you got me this piece of shit. They won't even connect to the internet.
So, to your point, maybe I should be empathizing with parents and not the kids.
There you go. I don't know if you raise a little piece of shit like that. I guess you kind of deserve it.
Yep.
Touche. Now, Lizard Squad would continue to terrorize many networks in the coming months, including the dark website browser Tor, the Malaysian Airlines website after the plane went missing, which included an error message saying, error 404, plane not found.
Oof.
Yeah. And a DDoS attack on Daybreak Gaming Company, disrupting services for their games H1Z1 and PlanetSide 2. Now, one such incident that I found that I can't completely corroborate as being true or not, but it allegedly includes an attack on John Smedley, the president of Daybreak Games and Sony Online Entertainment. Now, John was vocal about the group in the media, and the group tracked his travel itinerary while he was flying from Dallas to San Diego and called in a fake bomb threat on the plane while in flight, where it had to land in Phoenix so they could check to see if any bombs were on board, but they found none.
What was that guy's name again?
John Smedley.
That sounds like an executive's name.
John Smedley Bartholomew III.
Don't you know who I am?
Eventually, the law would catch up with the group as several key members were arrested, including Vinny Omari, who was the public face of the group on media outlets, Julius Kivimaki, which I apologize if I pronounced that incorrectly, a Finnish member who was convicted of over 50,000 computer crimes, Zach Bukta, who was an American hacker who was 19 at the time of the attacks. Brandley Jan Wilhelm van Rui from the Netherlands was also 19 at the time of the attacks, all of which were charged or convicted of crimes associated with the group's DDoS and activities, as well as stolen credit cards and ransom attacks. Now, the group quickly disbanded after the Christmas attacks and is suspected that many of the members are still at large. So to kind of wrap things up, it's important to note that hacking groups like Lizard Squad do engage in illegal activities and their actions are widely condemned. You know, we live in a strange era where technology and crime have merged, and I encourage anyone to do their due diligence when online to keep yourself safe. So,
yeah, make sure all your passwords are ABC123.
12345.
That's the same combination I have on my luggage.
Well, thank you for attending today's Gaming History 101. Just a reminder, if you have ideas for a story or a topic you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com and we might feature your suggestion.
Thank you, Professor. And that about does it for this episode of Gamers Week. Thank you for listening to episode 107 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at @GamersWeekPC. Watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/GamersWeekPodcast. There it is. Email us at GamersWeekPodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And join us on Patreon at patreon.com/GamersWeek. Also check us out on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. Finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
And by the way, we're technically on MySpace too. I haven't set up the account. I can't figure out how to verify the account, but we are on MySpace.
Well, then we're not, because we have a blank account. Does that mean we're actually there?
Yeah, you know, we're there in spirit. We're there by proxy.
So with that being said, Gamers Week is on Tinder.
Ooh. Well, have you created an account?
No, I have not. I can't download an app like that. Are you kidding me?
Podcasters seeking listeners?
Ooh. Well, we will swipe right for you.
I don't hate the idea.
Blue, you have some homework.
Oh, why do I have to do it?
Because you said you didn't hate it. And on that note, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Where my money at? Let's go.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.